This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu and you're listening to Enterprise. We've got the folks from Digital News Asia here. You should have sorted out the mic before we went on air. We've got Anusha Kandasivam and Chong Jin Seong from Digital News Asia. And if it's a good thing, then Karamjit Singh won't turn up. Anyway, good to have you folks.
Actually, he's just outside.
Oh no.
Okay, we'll let him in. But in the meantime, let's just get started as well with, of course, we talk about the tech ecosystem and what's happening in this space. So Anu, you've got a story on Commerce Asia Enterprise.
Yeah.
What's that about?
So Commerce.Asia, Frida.
Okay.
Sorry.
Mr. Dot.
Yeah, that's not your fault, I'm sure. It's Jeff's fault. So Commerce.Asia is basically another brainchild of Ganesh Kumabhanga, who is a veteran entrepreneur. So what he says is that SMEs and small businesses need to embrace omni-channel commerce. It's not e-commerce is out the window. If you're not embracing omni-channel commerce, then you're losing out. So what? But the problem is that SMEs have difficulties in actually moving their businesses online quickly and efficiently because there's so many things to think about. There's so many marketplaces, there's so many logistics problems that you can't even put your, you don't even know what's going to happen, and so they don't know what to do and they get scared and then they don't go online. So Commerce.Asia is basically there as a one-stop solution to help bridge this gap between SMEs and technology enablers.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I know he's also kind of involved in, well, at least part of the involved in DFTZ as well.
Yeah.
So this should come in handy.
Yeah. So that he didn't. So the Commerce.Asia launched on March 21st, which is just not so long ago, like a month ago. But he didn't talk about DFTZ, though. I think Karim and I do know, like we have some insider information from Ganesh himself that, you know, things are going to be happening with DFTZ as well in the future. He's slowly pushing things out.
Okay, so because we're one of the things that we're going to be having our own event, at Enterprise Rocks on May 8th around retail. So that's going to be a topic we're going to get key. I'm going to get key people there so that you know, at least I'm sure people will be interested to know what's going to happen, how it's going to affect.
Very interested. Yeah. There's huge amount of interest around DFTZ because it's a reality. It's here. You know, whether you believe or not that it's a backdoor for Alibaba or whatever, it's also a marketplace for us, right?
Yeah.
China, right?
And then so I guess so you can look at it both ways. And then it's this mysterious word. I guess a lot of people. So we just want to put some you know, meat to it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, meat to it.
I just want to add in that Commerce.Asia is actually seeking equity crowdfunding on Pidgin. So it's actually live right now, the campaign. It started on 27th of March and it's going to go on for another 26 days, 23 days.
How's it doing so far?
It's going slowly. And now I think it's around 25% done. So they're trying to raise 3 million ringgit.
Oh.
Yeah. So, but he did tell us that before the campaign launched that he had about 50%
committed already.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it looks like he will reach.
What's the closing date again for that? April.
Oh dear.
Okay, you can do it.
26 days, yeah, probably.
Yeah. It started on March 27th, so it goes on for 30 days, I think. Mm, yeah.
So it'll be end of this month,
right? Yeah.
That, of course, is Karamjit Singh joining us. And of course, we have to talk about Uber and Grab.
Yeah,
that's on, you know, still hot. What's your story around that?
I think we did. So you know, it's kind of scary how fast things move because we were working on this. You know, it came out on Monday, and then we ran our story on Tuesday, and Monday night someone told me, "Karam, that's already old news, lah." You know, I said, "What do you mean it's old news?" You know, it's the mega merger of our times, right? In the digital economy in Southeast Asia. Hugely significant deal because two, you know, fierce competitors with a common shareholder, you know, SoftBank behind. So we don't know what is going on in the background, you know, because competition very fierce means, you know, consumers benefit, right? Because prices are kept low, oftentimes artificially low because you're doing market share and you hope the other guy blinks or you know, dies out, you know, or runs out of funding and say these guys are crazy or you know, they've played a better game out. But here now, you have a merger going on, which is fantastic. And there's actually an email that Uber CEO sent out to staff saying that, you know, you would have by now heard that, you know, we're doing this and it's for the better of the company because we're fighting so many battles, we've got to focus on other key markets, right? Mm. And so now we have a part of a very exciting company, meaning, you know, Grab, and we're going to jointly grow it together. So,
right.
But you, as a customer, you're right, there are already fears all around, right, that you've got a monopoly. To be fair, the word monopoly, you cannot use that word monopoly because they're not the only player, correct? Mm. I mean, you have options. You have the existing, you know, taxi companies out there.
Yeah.
So they are there. And then in Indonesia, of course, it's not Gojek. A monopoly because you've got Gojek, right? Yeah. And Gojek now is on the verge of expanding in the region.
I'm sure they'll drop by here.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Because I think their CEO, Nadiem Makarim, you know, if I got the name right, already said in an interview with somebody, and I read the article in the Jakarta Post, he said, look, we just don't want to play a defensive game, meaning, you know, these guys are in their market, you know, Indonesia. He said, we need to go on the offensive. And his timing actually is whether by luck or whatever, its timing is great because now consumers will be waiting for someone else in the sense of, you know, having another app that you can use, right, for ride sharing. Mm. So when they come, I think they'll find a very receptive consumers receptive to them, just because then it keeps, you know, a Grab and Uber in check, right?
Yeah.
Say if pricing goes up too much and we think it's unfair, you know, we've got the other option.
And that's the thing, right? I mean, when you say, you know, it's not a monopoly, and when did it become a need, it was a want?
I think,
and this is just something that came about a few years ago. I mean, even like there's comments to me, like there are comments even back then that, oh, Astro was a monopoly, and like nobody asked you to subscribe.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the thing, right? It's not a need, right, in the first place.
But yeah, so in the case of Grab and Uber, and you know, before that, maybe Taximonger, right, in Asia, run by Nizran Nordin, right? It's just, they just removed a pain point, or they remove a friction, because, you know, taking cabs can be frustrating, right? You put your hand out and then the cab driver looks at you and just drives by. Because
you know, it came out in the papers. I don't know if you got the latest or not, but this was about a week ago where Uber employees were asked to leave the office.
Oh, that was I don't know whether that's true or not. I actually heard it on the radio also.
Yeah.
So yeah, whether it's true or not, whether it's been verified, I don't know.
It came out in the Star, right?
Yeah, but they were, but then you got to look at their report. Okay. Were they quoting from someone else or they actually spoke to Uber? Because that's very drastic, right?
No, they were talking to employees. It was an article that came, so I don't
think so they actually spoke to employees.
So it was an article that came out, you know, I think like in the business pages and all that. So you don't have the latest on that.
No, but you know, if you said they spoke to employees, then that's kind of not a smart thing to do. You shoot yourself in the foot, because you can come out, Grab CEO I think has come out to say that he sees there'll be zero issues in terms of the merger. Yeah, but then, and consumers saying, and you say consumers will be, we're not going to, you know, abuse our pricing, you know, a dominant market position, because it's not a monopoly. But then you start reading about, oh, you know, staff were asked to leave immediately or whatever. What does that say about the mindset, right? And so it just reinforces your belief that they're going to, you know, mess with you and the pricing is not going to be fair. But like I said, this sets the stage for Gojek, right? If Gojek comes in, and they will at some point, hey, great, another, you know, player to compete against. And then, of course, when you've got a big player with deep pockets like Gojek, they've also raised close to $2 billion, right? They're going to be able to, you know, buy loyalty or buy customers, right, with discounts and all. So it's going to be a game on again, you know, at some point this year, I'm sure Gojek's going to come in.
And it's ultimately the customer. You know, ultimately, you want the customers to win.
Yeah. Right? Customers, ordinarily, the win doesn't always mean they're cheaper, but, you know, time cost is also important, right? So more convenient, right, and more efficient, right? And you want that. So that has already been delivered by guys like Uber and Grab. And now you worry about the price point. But with Gojek coming in, that will be negated to some extent for sure. And also the shareholding, you look at Gojek's investors are a different group from Grab. So they're not going to come cozy and say, hey, you know, okay, let's, you know.
No cozy.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be all out competition again. So when that comes, that'll be great. But Grab's got a lot to do. And then you got regulators, especially in Singapore. Credit to the Singapore Competition Commission. They came out the same day saying, we were not informed of the deal. They didn't sound happy about that. And we can stop it from happening. In Malaysia, you cannot. Let's get it clear. Our Competition Commission only came out with a quote to me late. Yeah, they came out, I think, with it on late Tuesday night or Wednesday. To me, that was late. I tried to reach out to them on that Monday evening itself with an email and phone call. I didn't get through. So they said they will look at the deal. Yeah, it's nice to say you look at the deal. But in Singapore, actually, the deal will not go through if the commission say we think this will be, you know, it will distort the market competition. It's not going to happen. And, you know, the cab companies, they are very efficient also, right?
Exactly.
And they've got strong lobbying power. So Singapore is the space, the country to watch to see whether this deal goes through or not.
And but then Singapore is a different market altogether.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So, yeah. Much more close. But you still, there is competition, very good competition there, and you're going to see what that happens. And the regulation, the competition commission can actually stop this. In Malaysia, it cannot, because I spoke to a lawyer, and I quoted in my article also, and she said that, you know, you cannot stop the deal from happening. After it happens, if they feel competition is unfair, then they can act. Or this is actually where all of us individually, if you feel, you know, the pricing has gone up unfairly, then you can complain. Up, right? Yeah. And, you know, this is not rocket science, right? All of us are creatures of habit. We typically, you know, if we are already heavy users of these apps, this service, you're already going in the same areas, right? On the weekends, or the timing is about 80% the same. And if you suddenly see coincidentally pricing going up gradually, say, hey, what's going on? I think this is unfair. Then you lodge a complaint, and the Competition Commission will act. And if they don't act, then you put on your social media, hey, I complained 1 week ago, I didn't get an acknowledgement, I don't know what's going on. Is the Competition Commission sleeping? And that will light a fire under their tush.
Hashtag so, not fake news.
Not fake news, yeah. this will have, so we've got power too, thanks to the social media platform. Use that.
Okay, so it's like Marvel and DC, You know, we're watching this space. Okay, correct. We'll talk about Malaysia Airlines and other stories after this. We've got Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivam, and Chong Jin Seong from Digital News Asia. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Balanced Frank Medium, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise. Good morning. This is Frida Liu. The folks from Digital News Asia are here. Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivam, and Chong Jin Seong. And, you know, we're talking about the technology space. We talked on about Uber and Grab earlier on, and also Commerce.Asia Enterprise. Jin Seong, you've got the review.
It's not quite a review.
But this is a launch of Huawei's new phones.
Their new flagship smartphone is the P20 series. So this was actually announced last week, and just 2 days ago, it was actually launched in Malaysia, and it's set to go on sale tomorrow on Friday.
Okay.
And we should be getting a review unit of that, and that, so stay tuned for the review. But in the meantime, the actual big story about this one is that this is one of the first phones that you actually can find three cameras on the back. So you,
because one isn't enough.
If not one, I mean, two is still coming up nowadays. I think every other phone now, phone manufacturers will have
two. I don't get it.
Phone
Never
manufacturers.
Mind, three. Okay,
yeah, so actually, phone manufacturers have one or two ways when they're using two cameras on the on the back of the phone. Either they will have one lens that's going to be wider for taking selfies, or the other alternative is that you have one that's like telephoto, which you can zoom in. So like this one is like a combination of everything. So Huawei has made the P series phones with Leica in mind. So this phone is no exception. So the long story short is that they are combining elements from the previous series into this one, and including, you know, telephoto zoom with it. So you can zoom up to 3 times and even 5 times if they are hybrid zoom. So like it also captures in black and white, and just basically it's a photographer's mobile phone.
I want to do a review of this.
I'll bring it in, and hopefully we can take a look at it.
I want to see the camera in action.
It is interesting. I mean, if they've even embedded AI inside the camera, so you can, this is the same kind of, this is something they put in their previous phone called the Mate 10, and our contributing editor Edwin has already did a review on the Mate 10. But that was one of the first phones that had the AI feature inside it, whereby the camera can detect, okay, that's a cat, that's a dog, that's food, that's a person. So like it can quickly pick up and adjust the settings for it automatically. This phone also does the same thing, but one addition to it is that you're able to they call it AIS, which is AI image stabilization.
Right.
So you can, it is claimed to be even stable, more stable, because usually when you're shaking hands, you need to be able to hold it steadily. So this enables it to even snap better pictures in the dark.
I see.
So you can take your
Which resulted in why my photo with Idris Elba was a bit, blur. So this phone would have been handy.
Taking ninja pictures of
people behind you.
Yes.
Idris Elba.
So this one, pricing?
Pricing is really going to be priced at, so there are two models. Yep. So there's the P20 and the P20 Pro. Excuse me. So the P20 Pro is the one with the three cameras. P20 is the small cousin with two cameras. Nevertheless, their price is at 2,599 ringgit for the P20 and 3,299 for the P20 Pro. Now, considering the pricing, actually, it's quite interesting because this is actually quite competitive, you know, comparatively. Yeah. And I've seen a lot of phones recently. And this is a flagship phone, but they're pushing it at the early 3,000 ringgit range, which is quite surprising. And
because were they always in that price range with the other phones?
I think, yes, typically they've been around that same price range, but the competition generally has been pushing the boundaries and been pushing to... So like the more expensive model usually would typically range at close to 4,000 ringgit on other competitive phones, whereas this one... The top line's already at 3,300 ringgit, which is.
I haven't crossed that 3K barrier.
Yes, me neither, man. Me neither. I haven't crossed the 2K barrier, man. No, but okay, you know, that's interesting thing. Huawei, because the company isn't just dependent on you know, smartphones as is for its revenue stream, right? It's a very strong IT player also in the enterprise space, and they, you know, they roll out a lot of infrastructure for telco. Yeah. So this is where they're subsidizing, you know, their profitable businesses, you know, are subsidizing a new business they're trying to get into. So, and you're competing with global players, right? So, this is just one of those strategies like you use also.
Potentially, yes.
Right. Potentially, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, and Anu, you got a blockchain story.
Yeah, so blockchain is the new sexy word, isn't it? Everybody's talking about it.
Yeah, okay.
So, this time, MAGIC, Malaysian Global Innovation and Creativity Center, they hosted a discussion sometime last month of a discussion about the potential applications of blockchain technology in the education sector. Not something people usually think about. Blockchain is already being used in the education sector, but basically it's used to protect student data such as grades and certification and verify institution certification, as in like verify that a qualification that you have is issued by a certain university.
Okay.
Yeah, because the data on blockchain is immutable, you can't change it.
Right.
So, you know, if you say you're from that university and you have the certificate, and blockchain can prove it.
Okay.
So the first question is that they discuss is whether blockchain is going to fundamentally change education, and they decided it won't, because the delivery of education and classroom concepts are not going to be directly affected.
Mm-hmm.
What is going to be affected is recognition of student qualifications, because, and here's the thing, it makes possible the easy verification of prior learning, independent learning, transfer credits, and nowadays with people, you know, doing MOOCs and, you know, work experience and, you know, all kinds of online stuff, it's kind of difficult to verify it. You can just say that you set for a course, did a course online, and you know, you could, who knows,
right?
Yeah. So, and that kind of thing has already been used in Japan. So because people in Japan, according to one of the panelists, a lot of them take part in MOOCs, and when to get employed, they need to show that they have all these kind of qualifications and experience, and it's very difficult to verify it. And blockchain is starting to be used very, like, more and more to verify all this kind of thing. Yeah.
I still can't get my head around it completely, you know. So that's it's like the early days of cloud. What is it all about, right?
Yeah,
so and I finally understood cloud, right? And then blockchain comes along. Why?
Blockchains and cryptocurrency, and then when you start, you know, looking at the terms, you know, one Satoshi. What's one Satoshi? It's like 1 billionth of a Bitcoin, of a full Bitcoin token, right? I mean, who in their right mind comes up with it? Yeah, it's, one Karamjit is 1 billionth of a DNA coin or whatever, right? What? On one hand, you think this is rubbish, right?
Yeah.
But then there's, you know, there's
four
something
turbans.
Real for me to...
correct.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing, man.
Easier for me
and it's complicated. Some girl, I went for a cryptocurrency talk on Friday at soon to be your new office at Kent TDI. And then I was there just for half an hour because I had another function to go for. But then I thought this is important to go and just see who are the kind of people there. And then, frankly, the two people I saw talking to me didn't make sense, right? But they were talking about stuff. And, you know, like in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, right?
Yeah.
So, and then, but people just sense that there's money to be made in this space anyway. So you got opportunities or risk takers, yeah? People don't mind risk. Say, I think there's upside there. Bitcoin is down to like 8,000 something. You're just like, wow, so cheap now. Almost hit 20,000. It'll go back up at some point. I don't know. Jin checking is it. But there are people who will think like that.
Yeah.
And so I was just there to...
What do you have to say about this, Jin?
Yeah, chip in then, Zin. Go ahead. Yeah, Zin pula. Jin. Zin coin. Jin's Zin token. Yeah, one Zin.
I think maybe if we try doing our own ICO, then maybe we can finally ride that wave. But I think
correct.
I mean, you can see the rise and fall of cryptocurrencies are there. I mean, like, and even like some of the financial planners that you have on the BFM as well are highly skeptical of the cryptocurrencies and how volatile they are. Yeah. But you know, like it rising and dropping down to 8,000 USD right now. Yeah. It's like it could be good right now, but what if, you know, it suddenly drops further, or can it go up? Yeah. But yeah, there's always ups and downsides.
But I think you'll get to that point. I think you'll get to a point where it stabilizes, right? So right now, you know, like people just jumping in the bandwagon and everything, but it'll get to a point like how we didn't believe, you know, the .com, right? Everybody's like, oh, but really at the end of it, there are fundamentals in there, you know? And when you get back to fundamentals and things stabilizes, but I think it's going to be part and parcel.
This is very, very early era, you know, of cryptocurrencies. Yeah. It's just that people are so aware because information now moves at the speed of thought, right? So anything that happens somewhere, you hear about it. So typically back in the old days we wouldn't even yet have been hearing about cryptocurrencies or Bitcoin, right? And then now you got your Ethereum, you know, which is an alternative. So whole bunch of stuff. And then this as I was leaving, this pretty young thing came up to me and was started talking to me about, and she shoved a brochure in my
hand.
That's
the most important part of
it. The brochure and the email, and wanted my email. And then, I hope my wife's not listening. Anyway, she'll focus on the wrong thing. Anyway, and then she is talking about, you know, cryptocurrency. So I said, how long have you been with this company? Or, you know, how many months? So I said, do you understand cryptocurrency? Then she gave a sheepish laugh. So actually, it's quite difficult to understand. I said, then what are you doing talking to me about it, man? Get away from here.
But you must understand it. Not everything about blockchain is cryptocurrency.
Exactly. It's one,
small thing, but that's the thing that everybody's talking about because it's all over the place.
Malaysia Airlines.
Cryptocurrency also. All right, man. They're on it, so which I find
on it. Okay.
Yeah, they're on it. So I know. Not on it, but they are on to it, like they're observing it. So they had an event and they were talking. They launched some, you know, three digital products out there. But what's interesting is that you know, you already for a long time been able to book online, correct? So they've been online for a long time. So you want to say if that's digital, they've got apps also. But they're now just taking it to another level. And actually, and what's significant is that their digital team, I think 18 months ago, there were only 3 people in the team. Now they've got 40 people. So that commitment itself tells you how the company is, you know, planning to be much more digital, and it makes sense, right? And they said their own data shows that more than half of their customers, you know, prefer to interact with the airline, you know, through mobile. So that's why anything they do in the digital space, you know, will be the first product to come out will be a mobile version. Then they'll have a tablet version and a desktop version, which just makes good sense. So they've come up with MH Guardian, MH, you know, Feedback, and MH Chat, which is an AI-powered Facebook Messenger bot. Very interesting. Facebook now, of course, I think for now, somebody in the ecosystem said they've put a temporary block to people, you know, launching bots on their platform until this dies down. But I think looks like I think this MH Chat could be affected by that temporary block for a while, but they are planning to go ahead with it. And basically allow you to use Facebook Messenger as the platform, you know, to make inquiries and buy your Malaysia Airlines tickets too. Then the question is then immediately, the good for us, some other journalists, and of course we also ask, what about the personal data of the user? Because you're on a platform which is owned by Facebook. And according to Malaysia Airlines people, the data will be protected. They didn't go into the mechanics of it, and it's fair for you guys to ask, hey, you know, who's going to own my data if I'm using Facebook Messenger to communicate with you and actually to exchange credit card information too. So,
two words.
Yeah.
Cambridge Analytica.
So to be aware. But it's great that people are aware, right? Okay. So, but, you know, he's saying that, look, the entire focus of digital has changed. They're no more now just focusing on basic website updates. It's going digital, right? And the premise is to focus on delivering a better service to the customer. And I think there's an interesting quote he gave that said, we don't want to be, because, you know, this is, so honestly, Malaysia Airlines still today is a company that has gone through a trauma, right? I'm sure there's still emotional and psychological scars for the people who are left behind who are still there, because the company is down to less than half of its size, right? You've lost so many more people, slimmed down, and now suddenly the company is renewing its push to digital. It's interesting they didn't do it simultaneously. It would have been too much to bear, because people are also afraid of the dark side of digital, right? Dark side of digital. Anyway, so now he said that, and he said he acknowledged there are concerns of job displacements, especially in ticketing offices and call centers. But he states that, when I said he, this is Arved von Zur Muhlen. Okay, mm-hmm. I may have probably pronounced it wrong. Sounds Dutch. So he says that, look, you know, we don't want to be a machine-driven organization that is very efficient but cold. That's not our DNA. We need to combine going digital with the warmth of Malaysian hospitality. So that's what they plan to do. And, you know, they're going to keep as much as possible high-tech and high-touch. But you're in the hospitality industry.
Yeah, and that's the reality, right? I suppose where it is possible to be automated, it will be automated. But and then, like, where then do you focus on your other touch points?
Touch points, yeah.
Other touch points, right? Where, the, you know, and that comes in, right? Do you... So you have to figure it out, lah, where it's important to have the face-to-face contact. Where is it? Yeah, and keep that balance.
And don't fall into the trap of being, oh, I'm ahead of the curve, you know, because they said that they're going to be the first airline in Asia to have launched a you know, a messenger bot, what is this called? The MH chat, right? Mm. Is they're going to be the first AI bot, you know, by an Asian airline on Facebook Messenger. Okay. So, okay, you're the first. Maybe why aren't the others doing it? So it's not rocket science, right?
Right.
So maybe they're just faster, like, more nimble or whatever. But it's interesting. But back thing is, this is a digital company, a brick and mortar company, very much so, now moving more towards digital. Mm. And all airlines need to move there, right? AirAsia has shown the model, right? You have to go there and they're going to have to try to balance it. But it's interesting. I think one interesting point I would say is great. They had a hackathon last year, a series of hacking labs actually, right? To develop prototypes. And one of the products, which is MH Guardian, is actually a winning idea from the Malaysia Airlines Berhad Hackathon last year. Mm. So the point is that you also crowdsource ideas, right? So obviously, long time, I think your listeners, I was going to say readers, your listeners know that not all the best ideas are in an organization anymore, right? Mm. So you got to crowdsource. And the best ways to...
crowdfunding.
Yeah, and best ways to do a hackathon, right? Get people to come and help solve some pain points you have. And this is a fantastic thing right there. Maybe Malaysia Airlines or yourself wouldn't have come up with something like this. You know? So you got MH Guardian, which is really about how if you have you have children or elderly or you know, physically disabled people, you know, loved ones traveling, then this app will help you to keep a tabs on them.
I think when it comes to ticketing, I already am used to not having to deal with people.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. You know, so it's so that part I'm really used to it. So maybe.
So anyway, good for them, right? And moving forward, it's the way to go.
More stories after this with Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kadisivam, and Chong Jin Seong from digitalnewsasia.com. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Business for Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
Yes, they're listening to Enterprise. Frida Liu here, and Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivam, Chong Jin Seong from Digital News Asia here in the studios with me. Of course, we're talking about what's happening in the, you know, the digital world. All right, Jin, you've got another story on business of gifting cards.
Yeah, so this is actually a Malaysian startup that I interviewed a couple of weeks back. Actually, they're one of the startups under the Khazanah NEO program.
Yes.
Yeah, so they're actually part of the startups that were part of the, that's under the lead acceleration program. So these guys, we all face the problem when it comes to a festive season or whether it's like a birthday. And these guys are saying that, you know, instead of like scratching your head and trying to find that gifts, going to each individual shop, why not give a gift card? So the concept of gift cards is probably not as widespread as it is elsewhere. So actually, one of the founders is a three-man team made of Charles Chan, David Teo, and Tae Yun Kun. So Yun Kun actually was studying in the United States. So while over there, he encountered like the culture of gift card giving and actually thought, and you know, he realized that it's a coveted item actually to be given. And I thought, you know, gift cards were always scoffed at, like,
it's
what
like
I get.
Yeah,
it's very impersonal and stuff. I did point out to him.
So a physical card or
a physical card.
Okay.
But they're doing the both actually. They're trying physical as well as a more of a app kind of thingy. So they are in the business of making physical cards for businesses who have not made their own gift cards. So, but they're not shying away from, you know, approaching those who really have their own loyalty cards. This could be supplementary to it as well. But basically, they're targeting like, they could be your boutique restaurants, you know, you could be your Inside Scoop.
Serious?
Or, you know, there's other, you know, there's more of the cafe culture kind of places who do not have the expertise or the ability to make a gift card. So gift cards in a way to them, hey, Frida, I know that you like to drink a coffee. Here's a new coffee place you may want to go to, and I'm going to give you a gift card. So in a way, that it's a form of recommendation that, you know, it's a win-win for the end user. I'm giving something, it's a gift to a friend. And for the businesses, it's like a new customer from their own customer base who's like giving out, you know, the gift cards and, you know, generating, you know, new customers that way. So that is in essence what they're trying to do. And also they're trying to digitize gift cards as well. Mm. So you're not limited to like, oh, there's a physical gift card that you need to use. They're also trying to, in the future, have an ability to like digitize that scan that gift card and use it on your mobile app and, you know, be able to use it over the counter with, you know, whatever POS systems that's readily available. So, I mean, it's quite an interesting concept, but we have to wait and see whether we will...
Where's the money in this, huh?
Actually, they are self-funded, but a lot of the, what you call it, the support they're getting right now, the Kasanan Neo program, most of it is more of a knowledge accumulation. Okay.
So I'm saying that the business model, where...
Or the business model.
Yeah.
So, could you define that again?
So, I mean, how are they going to make money from this venture?
So, maybe a charging businesses when you make... It's not for free service. So, say I'm going to this cafe and say, hey, if you're interested in it, then they'll do the end-to-end service, you know, designing the gift cards, making the gift cards, doing the back-end system, correlating, you know, data, you know, whatever you get. And they did say, personal data is such an important thing, but in the gift card, the only thing is captured actually is just like, and it's quite, you don't get the customer's name, anything, but you get to see, like, on the business side, you get to see, like, oh, you know, what transaction it is, how much was spent, how much was reloaded in the gift card, things like that. So it's, in essence, I think you get to capture, you can even get this on the back end and you can correlate and hopefully form a better business plan with it.
Okay. All right. I'm just seeing whether, you know, was it something that I do or not, you know?
Gift cards?
Yeah.
Gift cards.
So whether that happens.
Yeah,
okay.
It's still early stages.
Okay. And you've got a story, Anu, on Zebra Technology?
Yeah. So Zebra Technologies is a technology company in Singapore and to some extent in Malaysia. So they came up with the Intelligent Enterprise Survey Index, basically measuring intelligent enterprises in globally, and they did focus more on Asia-Pacific as well. So as the survey defines an intelligent enterprise as a company that uses technology solutions that integrate cloud computing, mobility, Internet of Things to automatically sense information from enterprise assets and then act on the information. So interestingly, Asia Pacific is ahead of the global average when it comes to how many enterprises are intelligent, though there aren't as many as we think.
Right.
Yeah. So there are only about 2% of enterprises surveyed in Asia Pacific that are above the 75-point benchmark that they can be considered to be a wholly intelligent enterprise. Yeah, but more and more, the numbers are good, indicating that more are adopting technology.
So the rest are not so intelligent.
Yeah. There was a number, 38% of companies surveyed spend more than $1 million on IoT annually, and 80% expect the number to increase in the next 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So one of the reasons that there's not as many as they think there should be, we're not ahead of the curve basically, is one of the biggest challenges faced by Asian enterprises is that change management is very difficult.
Okay.
So getting people to change and also implementing a support system for employees and consumers during the organizational and process changes.
Mm.
Yeah, so same very simple reason why. People have been doing things for a very long time. It's very difficult for them to change how they do things.
Yeah, I think that's just human nature. Yeah. We all don't, you know, we know change is what, but then we don't really like to do it.
Yeah.
Now, okay, final story, Karam.
Which final story?
Bill Easy.
No,
there's no final story with Karam.
He mentioned, I think you mentioned Kazana, right?
Yeah.
And then you know, they're doing so many things. I just want to, before with the final story, I think it's fair they invested in Fashion Valet, who's one of our digital from the last batch. They didn't announce the amount, but it's a Series B. And it's a Series C. And Series C is quite significant. You don't know how much it is because they didn't announce it. But I was just checking online now, and Khazanah, in January of 2016, they were the lead investor for a Hong Kong fintech company, Series B. So Fashion Valley is Series C. The number alphabet is important because the higher the alphabet, the bigger the round, because you're going further into your journey as a company. But Series B in this Hong Kong fintech company, the whole round was $160 million, and Khazanah was the lead investor. So you wonder whether they put in, even if they put in half, that's a lot, right? And then so now with Series C, they're the sole investor, which is very interesting. Typically, when a company is the sole investor, another entrepreneur tells me, it means they're very confident of this company, and they want to just pow kaleo lah. Penang people say pow kaleo. Or chia kaleo. But anyway, so we don't know how much it is. I'm bringing this up because congratulations to Fashion Valley, right? Vivi, as a husband and wife, dear Fadza and Vivi for getting this round. And just this today, we announced that one of their competitors, which is a company called Zilingo, founders out of India, and they launch it out of Singapore. They raised $54 million Series C round also. So it's the same alphabet. This one is announced $54 million. So very interesting. Although Zilingo is very much in the Asia space, whereas Fashion Valley looks very much focused on Southeast Asia. Designers come, and they give you a platform and market your products, and they've got a brick and mortar position. So it's on O2O. Whereas Zilingo is just purely online. But Zilingo does a lot more in the supply chain too. Very interesting. Not direct competitors, there are some overlaps, but just trying to give you a sense of maybe intrigue, how much would Fashion Valley have raised from Khazanah, right? So it's a substantial amount. Congratulations. I wish they had given out the amount. You can get so much excited, hooking up to a number, right? Wow, they raised $X million. But they haven't announced it, too bad. But, I think Fashion Valley is going to go great guns with this boost, with this nuclear boost they've got from Khazanah, which is all our money too, right? So anyway, it's kind of interesting. So getting back to
the final story.
The final story, Bill, Bill Easy. So this is like what you're talking about, right? This young man, Tan Yong Meng, he's in his late 20s, but, he started out his construction company when he was in his first year of university, together with a mentor who's obviously a seasoned person in the industry. And from there, he learned the pain points. When you're trying to do renovations for people, you know how it is, right? You have changes in the last minute or in the early days and all that stuff. And for you as the contractor, it's so hard then. You've got to, retune things, or you've got to, charge everyone extra, right? But the customer sometimes just pull back, hey, why are you doing this and all that? So now, from learning about that, fast forward till today, he's got this Build Easy platform. He's pivoted from just offering construction services to building a platform where freelance designers, interior designers, can work with people who want to have renovations done for their homes, right? Work together. So he offers the platform. So because otherwise, typically, Frida, all of us, the first thing we do is so many things is, hey, I need an interior designer. I got someone good, right? You always ask word of mouth. It's incredible, right?
It sounds kind of like what Recommend is doing.
So it overlaps with what Recommend Accounting, but they're generalists, right? They do a whole bunch of it. He's only focusing in this space. The premise is that if I only focus on this place, I can offer much better value for all parties concerned. You're right. They're generalists. He's coming in as a specialist. And then also, he comes in, if an interior designer gets a customer from that, and then the customer then needs to use somebody, right, to construct the house or the new kitchen or extension, then Yong Meng is saying, hey, Easy Build is here, right? Let us do it for you because we're already in this space. That's the premise line. And then he takes a cut from, of course, the interior design fee. And then, of course, then when he's given a construction job, then he does it more. So
I think he also owns an ID magazine. If not, it's somebody else. But
maybe. He's saying that he wants to reshape the renovation and design sector, and just make it more transparent and professionalize it, which I think is a great thing to do. But, all these people who are trying to build these platforms where, people of expertise come together and meet the demand of consumers. The big challenge of this, and we've spoken about this before, is that one time you do it, and then if there's a platform for MCs, somebody finds you there, Frida, and the next time they love the job you did, are they then going to go back to the platform owned by Karamjit, right? And yeah, say, hey, I'm going to get
I'll
work
do directly,
through this.
Right?
You do directly, right? And I spoke to, actually, I spoke to my wife and said, look, this guy is doing this kind of interesting. And I said, if you find someone who's a good interior designer through this and you like his or her service, after that, the next time you need something jam, are you going to go to the platform and look for them or are you going to call direct?
So you feel that this business is a very, there is no continuation.
Yeah,
it's
one-off. Yeah, because you're dealing with human nature. How are you going to rejig and change human nature?
Then again, when you're doing renovation, right, you probably just do it one time anyway.
Yeah. Oh, you never know. Maybe at some point you do something else or somebody will, also someone will recommend that you had a family function. You say, this guy did a great job. Oh, really? You mean someone did a great job? I want to know who they are. You're not going to say, oh, sorry, this is the person, but you can only find him on this platform, right? You'll give them the number right away. So Yong Ming is very aware of this. So what he's trying to do is he's saying, look, there'll be incentives such as there'll be service guarantees, there'll be warranties, there'll be insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And he's come up with something called a happiness guarantee to discourage offline customer designer communication. Happiness guarantee, which basically means that I think at the end of the day, if you, the customer, are not happy with the service of the interior designer, then he will bear, you know, the cost of your unhappiness, which is a bold step to take. But you got to do something bold to try to keep people interacting on the platform, because otherwise you cannot monetize. So
so we'll watch this space and what they're
exactly
doing. So that's what I'm afraid. That's,
just lastly, that's for next week. So on tomorrow, we're going to, although you're not here for our Digirati 50 show, we're going to start running each of the 50, you know, entrepreneur profiles on DNA, and they'll start tomorrow. And of course, we do it alphabetically, but because this time, for the first time. Is that a good sentence or what? Anyway, we have a three-peat, right? We have Patrick Grove, who's the only entrepreneur we featured for the third time. And we're going to start off with him. We normally do it, we always do it alphabetically, but Patrick first. Oh, there's so many more. But tomorrow, Patrick's article comes out once a week. So you can read about why we thought Patrick was interesting enough to be featured for the third time in a row. Are we running out of entrepreneurs out there? Maybe that's the dark secret DNA is keeping. You got to edit that out of the podcast. Okay.
Anyway, you'll hear from them again in 2 weeks' time. Yeah. Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivam, and Chong Jin Seong from Digital News Asia. You've been listening to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.